We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Experience, presented by DraftKings. Smash a like and sub to the channel while you're here. And down in the comment section, throw me out some guests that you might want to see come on the Pat Mayo Experience, because as we get through the summer months, sure, we've got football coming up. More on that later in the week. Obviously, the golf is hanging around, but sometimes I like to sit back, I like to chat, and I like to chat with some interesting people, is what we're doing today. Brian Hooper from the Lowell's podcast. Is that the best place to call you from? Because that's the place where I know you from the most. Actually, I know you on with Davis, weirdly enough, the most, but I had such a good time when I was on with you and Pete. I was like, I got to talk to Brian more.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume that's probably the most well-known spot I'm at. I mean, I'm on Twitter, if that counts, but yeah, basically the most shows I do are with those two guys. Definitely with Davis, we do quite a bit.
So what do you prefer when you're doing content? Because, I mean, it just in full disclosure, I watched last week's episode with Hoop, with you and Pete, and I remember Tambo telling me one time that, like, you came on Run Pure to give out picks. Do you like doing pick shows?
No, I rarely do those. I rarely do pick shows. Yeah, I did Run Pure for like a bit, and Big T asked me, and he was on our show, so I always feel obliged, right, to return the favor. I do, and I do Osmos, Stochastic, sorry. I do their pick show 2 or 3 times a year usually. But I don't do the, you know, I like Rio, you know, this week I do. All right, I'll run my whole process right before the show if I can, and then go, this is what it's telling me, and I can guess as to why that it's thinking this, but you know, I don't really, you know, give specific picks usually.
Well, that's because how often do you ever make a gut play when you're filling out your DraftKings lineups?
Pretty rare. This weekend I did with Chase Hooper. I bumped him up right before I entered it, almost for the Lulz in its own, because that's been like a long running bit on their shows. Is Chase Hooper's. Because we did a live stream, God, it's been over a couple of years, where we had like Chris Randone on and just a whole bunch of people. And we didn't have that many people watching us back then. We had like 1,200 concurrents going on this live stream. It was during COVID, and we had to delete it because there was a lot of like COVID talk, and we were drinking a lot and stuff from some of the guests. And Pete, like, I don't know, he didn't feel comfortable with some of the things, and I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna delete it. I don't care. This is all for fun. I mean, it's still saved on my YouTube channel. But anyways, we got in an argument. The reason I bring that up, we got in an argument over the Amanda Nunes versus Chase Hooper, and Chase Hooper was getting beat pretty bad around that time, and like the other guys were saying that Amanda Nunes would beat her. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, we don't need to rehash this argument now, but ever since then we've just been using Chase Hooper as kind of a bit. And now those guys are on the Chase Hooper bandwagon, which just drives me crazy because they were besmirching this man for so long. So, like I did it. I did it that this weekend, which worked out well because he had like 200 strikes. But like, it's pretty rare. Sometimes I'll have like in football, I'll have like a tight end who is, like for some reason, my Sims giving me like 47% or something, 67%, something like that. And I'm like, I don't need that much of this tight end. I don't know why. It might just be something in my overall process that needs tweaking. But other than that, it's pretty rare. I don't like go in there and go like, I know Scotty Scheffler is going to pull this one out this week and I just got to get more of him, you know?
That's probably why you win and I lose every single week. Cause that's something that I would do. Cause I did that this week. I was like, 75% Cam Smith isn't enough. How about 95% because he's going to win. And then when he doesn't win, you're like, oh shit, that was a terrible idea.
That was a pretty good play though. Actually this week turned out on Sunday.
Yeah, but I took Rahm over Scheffler and Brooks, so that wasn't great either.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. He fell apart. I faded. So here's one thing I do. Like, I faded Spieth this weekend completely, Tom Kim, and McIntyre because of injury concerns. It's kind of just like my general rule of thumb with golf is the injury news is so bad. And like, I think they purposely. Like a big boys club back like in the, you know, 60s baseball days where they, or even the 80s and 90s where they wouldn't talk about them doing steroids. And they all knew, right? They would make up stories like, oh, McGuire had, you know, this workout powder. That must be what's it. Or he got new contacts. I mean, if you remember, Pat, back in the day, all the stories, the excuses they would make up. So I think they just like cover for these guys and we don't know the full injury concerns. So if there is like, you know, some news out there that they're hurting and it's golf, like it's so random and it's so hard to predict. I will not always, but generally fade them. And it bit me in the ass last week with Jason Day. Now, or was that 2 weeks ago where he won? I full faded him because the vertigo issues and it's Jason Day. But so I guess those are some exceptions to the rule, but usually people are more, they want like, you know, LeBron James is for sure going for 60 tonight. And I don't do that type of stuff.
Well, it'd be tough for you too. Like if you're basing everything off your process, your simulations that you're doing, I'm assuming that when you're going on to talk about this stuff, you're 150 max entering all of it. Like do you end up with a lot of like like last week, the PGA Championship in a player pool of 156 guys, like how many of the guys did you actually end up playing? Like 100?
Oh, you know, I don't know if it's that high. I should check. It might be more in the 80 or 90 range. When I was doing optimizer only, you know, tweaking using my own projections and stuff like back in the day, I kind of had this rule of thumb there where if I got, you know, 1% or, you know, very small amount in my 150 of a player who's like higher owned than that. So let's say the guy's like projected to be 8% owned. And I have 1% of them. I would just X them out and then rerun it again, because I think from an optimizer point of view, it's not smart, right? It's not smart, like a full sim bottom up process. And it's just optimizing is just adding together the numbers based on the constraints you're giving it, right? And the projections you're feeding it. And it's just like, this is 0.1 better than the one above it. So that's not like smart enough to where if you do go, you know, these 1%er guys that are super far owned, I would just get rid of them. But my process is saying that the full lineup of all these players, you know, mixed with what the field might look like and all these combo considerations that, you know, I can't do in my head. I don't think anyone could do in their head. It's saying you should still put this 1% guy in there, even though he's going to be higher owned. The lineup as a whole is still worth it. So I do play more players probably than a lot of folks, which I think people are really doing that more too, as I like look back through lineup study and see, and definitely in baseball, guys are playing 120, 140 players now where they weren't really doing that, you know, 2-3 years ago, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I suppose. Like, I remember, like, we've had different guests from time to time. Like, I mean, you've probably seen this just as much as anyone. You'll see someone go on the big heater in any sort of sport for, I mean, in golf, it could last a month because that's four tournaments worth. It's not like four really hot days in baseball. But I saw this during NBA season as well, where one guy would just kind of ship three tournaments in 10 days or something like that. It's like, holy shit, like, what is this guy doing that basically broke the slate? Why does he continue to win? But that, it's not that you don't see those people ever again. It's just whatever they did during that stretch was the optimal way to play, but it wasn't necessarily always the optimal way to play. And I think that I kind of fell into that trap, that a lot of people that I was seeing in golf were just playing these really small core of players. Like, they were playing 50 lineups, they were using 15 guys, and they were either going to be right or they were going to be wrong. But you know, it just leaves me some weeks where I have no six of sixes through the cut just because I had two guys wrong. I could have 13 of 15 do really well, but just those other two guys being such a massive exposure, like everyone at 10, 15% at minimum, just kind of blows up your entire spot. So I don't know whether, and golf is tough to do too, because it's once a week. You know, you could have good process for a month and lose every cent you have. It's really hard to tell until you have a large enough sample. It's like, oh, well, I'm losing a ton now. Maybe I need to switch this up. Like, how do you know what's best, or is it just whatever best works for you?
Well, for my current process, it's basically whatever the sim tells me. And I just looked it up. I played 79 players this past week in my 150 in the millie. So not super high. And I feel that's just like gut feeling. Somewhere around whatever the cut line is probably about right. If you're doing a full 150 anyways, you know, like between 60 and 80 probably. You know, because you want all these guys getting through now. So I just do what it tells me basically. Now, it previously when I was doing optimizers, I think you can get a little more, you know, what's the right word, like intervening and kind of try to like diversify a little bit manually. So I mean, I'm not a big fan of the one unique, you know, core 3-4 guys, and you get, you know, 20 players total in your pool 150ing, and then you either die or you take, you know, first, sixth, eighth, ninth, you know, whatever, however that looks like on the leaderboard. Although that is fun, because, you know, it's so top heavy now. Like, I know you're like, well, this is the strategy isn't to take first, seventh, or eighth or whatever. It's to like have, when you do good, like you want as many shots at getting that one good lineup from this. I get the strategy, and I'm not even against it really. I just think like portfolio management wise, like it's probably better to diversify. That's what the sims tell me in almost every single sport. Now it varies. So like some weeks I'll have like 67% of a guy, or it depends on the sport, which one we're talking about. Like baseball, like occasionally I'll have like 80% of a pitcher, you know, and sometimes the highest will be 30. So it does change, and which also makes sense, is another kind of rule of thumb I always say on the show is like, you should never like always be over. Like if you're a contrarian player, you should never always be under, like really low owned. Like sometimes you should play a guy who's chalky, you know, sometimes you shouldn't. Like, It shouldn't all, I don't know, I'm saying on a specific week what you should do, but if you're always going one direction, like that's probably not right. Because what the sims are telling me is sometimes you're going over and sometimes you're going under. And I'm thinking it's the same thing with portfolio management, where sometimes you should have a tighter core and sometimes you shouldn't. And so if you're always doing one or the other, that's probably not right. And like, you can also do some like really interesting you know, like actual portfolio theory from you know old stock tips you can Google online, where you're trying to get as much EV with as little risk as possible. And so like certain stocks will do well when others do bad, and you kind of, I mean, you can't really do it in DFS totally, but you can kind of picture that in your head, where like, okay, if this guy does bad, will this guy do good? Like an easy example would be in baseball. So like a stack against a pitcher, like if you have a bunch of that pitcher, and in basketball, this is perfect too. You can use this strategy in basketball quite a bit. If you have like, but let's back to the baseball one. If you have a pitcher who is like chalk or something, and you have a lot of them, well, you might want to put like 5% of the opposing stack in those in your 150 set to, you know, balance out your risk. And you could, you know, I'm assuming that makes sense to you, Pat, and then apply that idea to any sport you want. Golf's kind of tough. Golf's kind of tough too, because there's not a ton of correlations and stuff like that. But even with like a leaderboard, like if one guy goes up, the other guy goes down because that guy's taking all those points, you know? So like, I think you can minimize your risk even in PGA a little bit by diversifying smartly. Unfortunately, I can't just like tell you what to do. Like I could, you personally can DM me and I'll be like, hey, this week I got a smaller pool because all Scheffler, you just got to have 60% of them, but I don't know what to do on a week to week basis.
It's funny. Like there is such limited use of correlation in PGA. The only time I can ever really remember it working, like I know Raza does his skill stacks. Like, hey, I think this is going to be a bomber's paradise. So I'm basically just taking all bombers, play 95% of my lineups that way, 5% with like the shorter hitting accuracy guys in case something goes wrong. But even that, you can just completely whiff at the same time. And those two things aren't mutually exclusive. Like we've seen at enough US Opens where, hey, the big bomber guys are, you know, 1, 3, 5 on the leaderboard, yet somehow 2 and 4 are just short hitters who ran a hot putter that week. Like there's no real rhyme or reason in trying to make a predictive analysis of the situation. But I remember Dink probably 5, 6 years ago at this point, ended up winning, I think it was the 555 in back-to-back weeks in golf, by entering a lineup that was the contrarian wave stack. That was the only way I found to get like contrarian leverage on the field. Like everyone played the AM-PM. He's like, fuck it. I'm the only person playing PM-AM. I'll do that.
If you can't, especially in small field, it's a big boon to your EV to get that like one combo or even one guy. Counterintuitive, but like there is it's almost better to play those contrarian guys in the smaller field than the larger field, because like a 3% owned guy in the larger field, like this weekend or whatever, then how many lineups you're playing still against 3,000 lineups or whatever it is, you know, with that guy. But a 3% owned guy in a 200-man field, 300-man field, you might be the only one with him. And if he goes off, like, you know, that's clearly a huge edge. So now I, you know, caveat, I'd say this often, go play a bunch of 0.1% guys. That's not a good strategy. But if you can get, you know, this is more common in the NBA, actually. But if you can get, you know, Giannis or LeBron, believe it or not, at like 2 or 3% owned, which happens sometimes when they're in bad matchups with high salary and there's just there's not a ton of value on the slate. Like if you could get, you know, you got the one share of that guy and he just happens to have a 70-point night or something, that's really big. That and, you know, combos too can really pay off, where you could still play you know, Scheffler or somebody, and you get the and you just get lucky on your combos. So like that's kind of where the ownership game is. Like, you know, it stinks when, like, if you're trying to do that strategy I just laid out where you want LeBron at 1% owned, and then you open up the tournament and then he's 9% owned. You're not the only one with him. 9 other guys have him. Now it's a bad play. You got the worst player and a bunch of other guys have him and you're 200 man. So it kind of stinks that way, but that's kind of the guessing game with ownership. Where that's what you're really trying to get is unique that way, as opposed to the weather play. I kind of like it too, just in general, because weather doesn't always go the way it's planned. You know, shocker, they're off sometimes, and the delays. Pat, you're well aware. They'll be like, oh, there's a frost delay, so it's like, how long is that gonna last? 30 minutes? Two hours? Now the waves just shifted completely. So I just kind of like that. And that's another way to portfolio management you could do is like, okay, now I have, just making numbers up, I got like 50% in this wave of, you know, expected good weather. Well, let's do, you know, now stack the other wave just in case it switches, or who knows, you know, like whatever, there's a delay or something. Now you're kind of balancing your risk without really losing a ton, you know, assuming you're still building, you know, decent lineups.
This is what happened to me in Showdown round one at the PGA Championship, is that I looked at the weather. I was like, oh man, it's going to be way easier in the afternoon. This is great. I'll just stack afternoon guys. The frost delay hits for 2 hours, and all of a sudden the conditions are fantastic for all the morning guys, and all the morning guys go super low, and I'm like dead last in all of these tournaments because I didn't play enough lineups to have the ability to do it the other way. I played 20 and I was like, yeah, I don't really want to play like 50, do 30 one way, 10 one way, and a mix of 10 the other. I'm just going to commit to this and hope it works, and got completely wiped out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Who had a big spat, Big T and Levitan, right? Like a month ago about the weather. I mean, there's so few correlation in PGA that when you can use it, I think you should, is my general rule of thumb. So, but like, yeah, I mean, it can bite you in the ass for sure.
Is there any, we talk about like a lack of correlation in PGA. You've been talking about UFC a little bit. Obviously, there's not a ton of correlation in UFC, unless there is, and I just don't know about it. But I would think that being able to take a contrarian stand in MMA is actually probably pretty lucrative if you're playing a bunch of lineups, especially against yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is huge correlation in MMA, you know, the fighters fight each other. So like, you don't want the fighter from the same fight. So that's like one, and believe it or not, people do play against fighters against each other a lot. Cause I think they're just not paying attention or something.
Well, but you also get that like rare example, probably twice a year, where you need both the guy. There's some sort of five round decision where everyone lands 200 strikes each. It's like, all right, you needed both the guys.
Yeah, it's true. I just had this conversation yesterday. It's funny you say that. And so like there is 2-4% of the time where it's a good strategy. And so it would be on smaller slates when fighters are scratched. It's not COVID times anymore, so it's a lot better, right? We're still getting 12 usually. But when you start getting under that, it makes it more viable. Five-round fights are better than three-round fights, but there are some cases where three-round fights actually could be stacked. And it's really – I think the benefit is that combo uniqueness you're only playing against how many, you know, couple lineups now. And so you got to get super lucky still, and you're not going to be duped most likely. But that is an issue, especially in the five round fights. People know that there's a combination of people who don't know and they stack, and people who do know and stack. And so how many combos of that are there that are taking away that uniqueness edge? Right. So, I think going forward, when there's less than 12 fighters, I will be incorporating some stacking, but previously I almost never did. But now I'm gonna, but I almost hesitate to even say that. Cause like, if you're hand building, that's kind of tough to pull off. I think
I could see that. How hard is it to sim UFC based on like, every other sport has stats, and yes, there are stats for the UFC, but you have, let's say you have some guy on a 3-fight winning streak piling up either a bunch of takedowns or significant strikes, knowing that they were likely doing that against inferior competition. And when they make this level up, how is that going to translate? Or do you just put in a baseline for everyone and be like, all right, now that I've put the odds into it as well, whatever the first knockout odds are, decision odds are, I'm sure all of that goes into simulating the entire process, that makes up for it? Or is there something you have to look at and be like, that seems off?
So I want to eventually build my MMA stim to be more like, you know, like the Run Your Sims type of full game simulation, you know, where, you know, player X passes to player Y and then what happens, things like that. So like, it would be, you know, there's so many strikes, this player, you know, he strikes with what, and then what happens in that role, that iteration, and then just do that, you know, 1,000 times, unless the person gets knocked out, and then that's the end of the round. Okay, what time was it? Is there any bonus there? Move on, and then do that 10,000 times or 20,000. But I'm not there yet, and I'm not entirely sure it's needed. So like mine is more like similar to what you were saying, where it's based on the Vegas odds, win loss, a fighter wins, fighter loses, and then there's a roll on a score generated from first round knockout and all the Vegas info that I scrape. So yeah, it's not super complicated, but like MMA, I don't think you need it just yet. And it's so hard. It would be hard to do that anyways. I'm not sure what bonus you get. Your distributions would look a lot sharper probably. But a big part of MMA, as we've said on our show a bunch of times, is dupes. And so, like you just want to very similar to the small field strategy I laid out earlier, where you want one, two, three, dupes, but with the really good lineup. And the problem is you're playing against other people who are smart and they know this now. And your projected three now turns into 12, you know, your projected 12 dupes, your projected one is now projected three. And so you got to go further and further down the tree there. And then those lineups just have no chance. So like, I know a lot of guys were doing like 149 out of 150 were one dupe. Like, yeah, you're a genius, right? Like, no, probably not. Like most of those are probably dead. And sometimes they're like have a very, very slight chance and then they hit it. And they're like, see, I told you, just play the one dupes, but it's, you're really trying, you're hoping the other people make a mistake on a lineup and you don't get duped, but that it's still good. So there's like a balancing act, and all that is just so much more important that, you know, than whether, you know, Chase Hooper's, you know, his projection is 68 or 72.
I can see that. We're working actually on an MMA product at Run the Sims right now. We're trying to corner the market on all football, whether it be NFL or Spring League football. And it's funny how much more profitable per dollar Spring League football is. The issue is just getting the money down on it. Like to talk to Paul. Paul, was Chase Hooper the guy that quit halfway through the round that you loved? Was he that guy?
No.
Who was that guy? Yeah, remember you loved him, and then he got beat, and then we tried to back. You tried to back him again. He like quit in between rounds.
Oh, that was Max Roshkov.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he went to Bellator. He got knocked out recently. We don't need to talk about Max Roshkov. The pain is just too severe at this point. We just let Max do his own thing. He was on the show. Really nice guy, but hopefully he gets back on track.
But the Sims that like the Run the Sims that we've been using for the prize picks. Player props from USFL and XFL have just been a printing press, and I'm hoping that there are so few. How many people, like product wise out there, like you have your own simulations that you're running for UFC, but I can't imagine there's a lot of like huge lineup public or not public but like private that you can access simulations to UFC out there, is there?
No, I don't think there's any. I could be wrong. I know there's the, oh God, what's the name of the site? Saber Sim or something. And they say like they do Sims on the back end and maybe they have an MMA product. I'm not familiar with them, but no, I'm not aware of any simulations. And I, you know, when we first started doing our show, me and Pete, and he still makes fun of me for it. I thought there were like 10, 20% of guys were doing Sims and doing their own projections and stuff like that. And it turns out it's way less. Like even Yuta Kao doesn't do his own Sims and stuff like that. He's more like a hand builder, but I mean he won 50s obviously and uses an optimizer and stuff like that, but he's making his own opinions a lot of the time on how he should play and not using a sim. So there's not many. It's still new in the game, and I've talked to Justin about his MMA sim a little bit.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that it's good before we put it out. And like he tried it out with F1 and it actually worked really well with F1. The problem is everyone just seems to get to the same lineup in F1 regardless of what you do.
Yeah, it will work more like, at least in my humble opinion, Pat, I know it's your guys' product, but it would work more like a showdown in football. And so like if you take the number one, you know, lineup on Run the Sims for showdown, and you're playing in the 150, you're probably going to do quite a bit, right? So like, you got to look at ownership and then search for some teams that you want down the list. And so I think you'll get some users, you know, duping themselves, but you know, quickly they should realize that they're going to have to go far down the list to get some unique lineups in there. But it should still benefit. I mean, honestly, I probably will switch to run the Sim. I'll have to talk to Justin about what you guys do release it, but I might try to implement that into my process.
Yeah, you can get the friends and family discount of just DM me and I'll send you a login.
Great. I already have a login, but I need one for the MMA. I need more than a login.
You need back end access to it. You kind of hit on guy like different players don't use Sims. You know, they use an optimizer or they're making their own stands on everything. What do you think the most anyone has ever won in a year in DFS is?
God, that's tough. 5 million, 10 million.
What do you think the most anyone's lost in a year is? More?
No, I would say less, because I don't think we have any whale. Like, we don't have any that. Who's the guy who runs Cirque de Soleil? The Canadian guy.
The French guy?
The French guy.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Whatever his name is, he's a huge poker player, and he would just donate on Full Tilt back in the day, like millions. Like, I don't think we have anyone like that, do we? So, like, the guys who would donate $2 million in a year probably won $5 million the last few years before that. And I'm not sure. I honestly wouldn't even call it donating. Like, GPP, professional GPP variance is the worst than any gambling I've ever been, you know, associated with, and I've been associated with almost all of them. So it's absolutely brutal. So like, if you are playing, like, you know, Mach 11 stakes, he's probably the hot, he not only stakes but volume, he's the highest volume guy, you know, Osmo during his prime. They could swing a million in a month. Easy. 2 million.
That's gotta be a tough lifestyle.
It's not easy. I know. Yeah. I've been close.
Do you have to be like a computer? Like, essentially you have no emotions going into it? Like, are you full tilting the entire time when you're in one of these downswings? Like, how do you prevent yourself from like tripling down on the losses like you see people do in sports betting or in a casino or whatever it might be? Or does that happen?
Well, it's harder to tilt like that for me, at least in DFS, than like poker. I mean, cause like, you gotta like put your lineups in and stuff. And like, I'm still like, it's hard for me to tilt because like, I'm still doing like, you know, a simulation and R and all this stuff. It's like, I don't know how to tilt like that. Like, okay, let's press the button and let's upload all the stats. And, you know, I don't even know how you tilt, like, even without that stuff. Like, I'm going to enter Griot and Scheffler. I don't know. I don't get it. In poker, it totally makes sense. You could watch like the old Tough Fish videos on YouTube. You know, you just chip all the money in, right, with nothing, and do that four times in a row, and then you lose half your roll. So, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to see the whole tilt thing, but it is tough. Like, well, first of all, obviously losing sucks, but like, it's tough to just know what your edge is year in, year out, because the game is always changing. We know it's always trending towards efficiency, as all these markets where there are competitive people, smart people, and money involved, and cheating, right? So you always gotta, you know, no matter what you're playing, DFS regardless, you always got to be aware that, you know, maybe some shenanigans are going on. So and you know, it's not as bad now, but before, another warning would be like the sites would go under and you lose. So you never put too much of your roll on any site, but that's pretty unlikely in this, you know, highly regulated environment.
Well, I guess it would depend on the site. Like, I think that's always the fear of any startup that starts throwing money around right away. I remember at Fantasy, I think it was in 2014, like, Fantasy Aces sponsored some sort of segment on the channel. Fortunately, I was not involved with that, but they just closed their door one day and ran away. No one got any money back.
I was one of them. I was on that list. They sent out a list of everyone who's old money. Luckily, that was when I was first starting. That was a long time ago. And I only had like $3,000 or $5,000 on there, something like that. But yeah, there could be some new, I mean, I don't want to shame them because I want more startups to come and compete. It's just because of the regulation, the barrier to entry and the costs associated with getting state licenses and stuff like that and legal fees and lobbyists, is we're probably stuck with what we got unless like a big boy gets involved like CBS or something like that. So, you know, you're probably not going to have your role, you know, taken by some Canadian rich kid like on Fantasy Aces, but you know, you're going to have higher rake and less competition and probably may not even be able to beat it. Who knows, you know, in a few years it might get so high because of the lack of competition. So it's a trade-off that, you know, there's nothing you can do about it anyways.
Yeah, you just kind of have to roll with whatever's in front of you at the moment and try to adapt to that. But I don't even see, I mean, unless you're a player props pick site masquerading as fantasy, I just don't see who would even get into the FanDuel doesn't even want to be in the DFS space anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, does it?
No.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I think they wanted to get bought out, right? You remember, Pat, and they Congress denied it, said it was a monopoly, and that was probably a mistake because clearly they were done. I mean, it's still available, right? It's still there. They're still providing it. It's not clearly not their focus. So I'd rather it be there than not be there. But yeah, they probably should have just let that merger go through in hindsight.
Well, yeah, I just don't see where if you were just trying to assess, you mentioned like, because I know even from the inside, like I'm employed by Sports Hub and they run their own sort of contest, not necessarily DFS contest, but they fall under the banner of fantasy. So like the giant one and done that we run through them at Fantasy Golf Championships is only available in so many places now and like excluding Ontario and Canada, which was actually like a, you know, it's a big part of my audience. DraftKings isn't available there either. I mean, that's where I started this show from. So I've lost a lot of viewers from there because it's only sports betting now. And then in that in-between time where DraftKings was taken out and all these pool games were taken out, that they just don't have access to it. So they don't care anymore. So they end up tuning out. So that kind of sucked. But in order to get into the DFS market, it's just not profitable unless you're DraftKings, essentially at this point. And even for them in like these highly regulated places where they treat fantasy the same as sports betting in terms of licensing, just you're not going to, unless you're a sports book, there'd be no reason to get into it because you just can't make that kind of money in DFS, especially as a smaller site.
I mean, I kind of agree, but I do like push back on this idea that, you know, like that there's like these finite resources and they could only do one or the other. Especially because it's like modern times. It's not like we have to send, you know, half our workers to go build the, you know, railroad underneath a mountain, or we do something else, right? It's like, it's already set up and it's automated, like a whole bunch of it. Like I know they need customer service and it's not something, but it's a lot less than before. And like, you could see like, you know, like Amazon or something, they do tons of stuff. Right? Why wouldn't they like stop selling toys and focus on something else that might make more money? Like, I feel like they should be able to do it. I think it's probably just incompetence in FanDuel's part by their management team, or like in you know Canada, that was, you know, a regulatory hurdle, right? They want to provide the product in those territories, but they can't like legally. So I mean, I get it. Like I understand the logic that, you know, no, they're just going to focus on something else because the profitability is so, you know, is higher in sports betting. But like, I mean, I don't think like, you know, just like at a restaurant or something too, right? Like, why wouldn't you just sell hot dogs if you make higher profits on it, right? Like there needs to be a variety of, like, there's just all sorts. I just don't think it makes like economic sense to just say, it makes higher profit sportsbook. You know, these greedy casinos, they're going to put the slot machines everywhere. It's like, yeah, well, they don't have any space in casinos and there's unlimited space on the internet. So I think they can do it. And I think some of it's incompetence, not just like the greed aspect to it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I just think, I mean, I can't speak for the bigger companies because I don't really know. And from what I can gather, like especially Ontario related, that the issue lies in the legislation of legalized sports betting within the province, that they combine DFS and sports betting into one, where it's simply not profitable to run a DFS contest because they're being charged the same amount of, they're being charged more in tax than the rake is on a tournament. So they're like, why the fuck would we do this?
Okay. That's a different argument. That's also ridiculous from your government or whoever's government is there.
Well, they just don't know is the thing. Like, that's why the lobbyist would have been very helpful going into it, but they wanted to pass legalized betting so quickly. There was no one on the inside who knew anything about any of this stuff. They're like, hey, let's legalize sports betting. You know, daily fantasy, that's sports betting too. This over here, that's also sports betting. Let's just make it all one, not knowing how the economics of each of them actually worked.
There's a lot going on there. So it's not just like it's incompetence, right, on the legislator's part. They don't understand it. There's political interest. Like if you have casinos in that state, they don't want the competition and they've lobbied and have relationships with these legislators that they're going to leverage against doing that. Greed's not the right word, but a lot of local legislators, if you can't print your own money, like the U.S. federal government, like a local state government, they actually do have budgetary concerns, and like they see gambling. And this was told to me. I used to work at the Capitol here in Illinois, and the legislators told me, you know, gambling is a tax on stupid people, right? So they're like, whatever, 25%, 50%, who cares? It's the lottery, you know. We tax that at 50%, so we'll just tax this. I mean, I guess you could kind of combine that into the ignorance of they don't understand. And then lastly is the gambling addiction, wild, wild west, casinos rip you off, you know, Hollywood fantasy version of gambling that a lot of people sadly have about gambling in general, which DFS is obviously, it's a skill game, but it's still gambling. And so they could use that to justify any of these things, the first three things or first two things or whatever you want to call it. So like you throw all that into a pot and it's just like a mess that's happening, you know, in your country and, you know, on a smaller scale everywhere, different states here, like Utah or whoever, California, like poker here in Illinois, we still don't have it because the casino, you know, one of the casino owners here is like very well connected and has donated tons of money to a lot of causes and PACs, et cetera, et cetera. So it's unfortunately like it shouldn't be this way, but it is. And I was just relaying that back to the earlier point. I think if DraftKings didn't have that hurdle, that regulatory hurdle of taxes, then you'd have both. You'd have sports betting and DFS. Like I think they'd easily provide it.
Oh, for sure. And now, like you mentioned before, the licensing fee to get into some of these states is just hilariously high, or the split that you have to give the state because of the taxes. I think that is keeping, like I was using us as an example, like there's just certain states that we're never going to run in until things change because we're not big enough for it to matter to us. Like we would just be paying out all the revenue coming in, or maybe not even making it up in some places to pay the initial licensing fee, where, you know, it's a lot of risk to go in if you're a smaller company. If you're DraftKings and you know that you're going to have all of, you know, the people sign up, you're going to have this volume. If you're not guaranteed to have that volume, then the risk is just turned up to 11 at that point. And you just calculate, well, we could not run and make sure we don't lose money, or we can run and we could potentially lose a lot of money doing this.
It's a double-edged sword though too, because they also use it against as a weapon against their competition. This happens not just in the gambling sector, but in any sector, insurance, even in like employment, part-time employment companies I've been a part of. I've seen legislation introduced to like, require bonds to hire. This is kind of a side note, but like bonds to hire part-time workers, like staffing agencies. You know, they'll staff like events and sporting events and stuff like that from out of state. That they require millions of dollars of that And then who wanted that legislation introduced? Well, the companies in the legislator's district that does staffing agencies. Oh, wow. What a shocker. And then they use, and then there's always this argument of, well, think about the person who works staffing at the NASCAR event. And then this fly by night company from Missouri, you know, doesn't pay them. Oh, the horror, right? We have to have this bond. And so they do the same thing in gambling, where they'll go, oh, well, what about our poor gambling addicts? We need to raise taxes so we could pay for, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then so they use it that way. But then also, if you're DraftKings and you can afford that, it's actually not that bad of a thing. And once you're entrenched and you've spent all this money, you demand of your legislator, by then you'd probably have lobbyists or you'd have some sort of connection. You want that barrier to entry to be high. Like, hey, I've been paying all this money. I've been passing all the laws. Like, why should we have poker stars here? I've been the one doing this, right? So they play it from all sides, and it's really just about politics, about money and influence and power.
Okay. Oh good. Michael Block. Michael Block is priced above Alex Norin this week in the pricing.
Oh my, that's ridiculous. I just figured out how to switch my view on Zoom here. I had you in this tiny little box and I'm like, I can't see his facial expression. that's ridiculous. Although Norin has not been super hot lately, but he's not that bad.
He's the 60th ranked golfer in the world.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Kisner is 500-1 this week and Michael Block is 300-1.
Wow. Because he got a hole-in-one?
I guess so. I mean, he is a legitimately, like, crossover into real media story at this point. He was on CNN this morning.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
When PXG says nobody makes golf clubs the way that they do, they're not lying. The PXG clubs I now have are absolutely incredible. So when I heard about their new Black Ops driver, the driver that promises you don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness, I had to try it because they call me the sandwich on the tee box. I got an awful lot of slice, and I've spent the past 3 years trying to work that out of my game. So I had one driver, then I had another driver, and then I went to a swing coach. I'm still going to my swing coach, and I went to a PXG location for a fitting and got my Black Ops driver, perfectly tailored to me. But here's the sneaky thing. When you're average height like Pat Mayo, not a whole lot of fitting you need to do. Clubs are made for you, but if you're taller, if you're shorter, you need to go to a PXG location to make sure that it's perfect for you to get that Black Ops driver with the breakthrough in driver technology. Because let's face it, we're not the guys that we're betting on all season long. We have some struggles when it comes to the game of golf, but we do want to get better. Like, I'm actively trying to get better. I took myself down from a 20 handicap to a 10 handicap, and I'm really hoping that without losing a bunch of balls and adding distance, adding accuracy this year, that I can get into that single digits. Maybe even try to challenge like breaking 75 this year. I broke 80 last year, hoping to break 75 at least once this year. And I do think with my new PXG Black Ops driver that I might be able to accomplish that. It's at least given me the best chance that I have. It has more forgiveness, more distance without sacrificing anything. Game changer has been thrown around so much it's really lost meaning. But trust me when I tell you, the PXG driver is a true game changer. You'll be as impressed with it as I am. So learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/mayo. And use code Mayo at checkout. That's pxg.com/mayo, code Mayo, for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/mayo, code Mayo.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think, not to change the subject, but if you'd want to talk about this, what do you think about the PGA championship style courses? For me, it's just like a lottery. They're just going, who knows? Your guy can be, you know, minus four one day and then Sunday he's plus 15.
I actually have liked the PGA courses versus the U.S. I mean, not aside, I like the U.S. Open as well. I just think that the PGA had to do something. The PGA Championship had to do something to make itself feel like it was worthy of the other majors, because for years it was just such an afterthought. Like, moving from August to May really helped it, although it expands the amount of venues that you can go to, because theoretically you could play PGA Championships in Florida right now, in Texas right now, where that seems pretty unfeasible in August, where it would just be too damn hot all of the time. Now, then the other end of the sword, you get what happened with frost warnings in Rochester in the middle of May. But I don't know. For whatever reason, I actually liked Oak Hill this weekend. I really hated that drivable par four, but I've been over that a few times. I like the idea that they've made it harder, even though it is a bit more of a crapshoot, that it's kind of like U.S. Open light in a weird way, but you can still make the pins scoreable enough that you could still have that style of tournament if you wanted to. Basically what we saw between Friday, where there was what, like one decent score, and then Sunday, where guys actually went out and shot a score. I do like that in a course. And I think that now that they've started to add courses to the rotation based on where it's landing on the schedule, because this was booked like 10 years ago from Oak Hill. I don't know if they'll go back to Oak Hill again based on the time of year that it is right now, that I do like it a little bit. And I do like the crapshoot. I mean, golf is a fucking crapshoot anyway. Like, who are we kidding?
I agree with all that. I'm saying more like from a DFS perspective. And I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it. And I like the US Open too. But it's like if you're, you know, Saturday at 2 o'clock and you know, you're in first place, like that means absolutely nothing. Where on a regular course, you still have a shot. Like, you know, you could win that, but it really doesn't matter. And like the reason I bring it up too is because that's like Michael Block or whatever. Like the reason he could perform is because it's so crazy that somebody like that will eventually pop just due to the variance inherent in the course like that. Which is kind of fun though, too. Like when some, you know, amateur is doing well or something like that. So it is fun for DFS. I think it makes the sweat. Well, I guess there's the flip side of when you're down, you know, like, hey, I could be winning on Sunday.
Oh, it's funny that we criticize the PGA Championship for something like this. And it is the main criticism that I've heard is that, like, how the hell can this Block guy go up against the best players in the world? Is it because of the course or is it because of the conditions? Whatever it might be. I mean, he hit like every fairway and made all of his putts for 3 days. That's why he got to where he was. That's not crazy. But if this was the Open Championship and there was some like 17-year-old amateur that was at the top, which is something that we see like once every 5 years, you know, everyone finds it quaint and it's like really fun.
Right. Yeah. They root for that guy. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you flipped me completely now. Now I love the Oak Hills courses. You win.
Yeah. I think the PGA made a decision, whether it was based on course selection, setup, whatever it might be, that they've had the most dramatic, like they've had the best finishes at majors over the past 5 years. Like the Phil Brooks one was awesome.
Oh yeah.
And like the Thomas comeback last year.
Yeah, that's true. Phil did pretty solid this week again too, for his age. He looks fit too to me. Still looks like he's working out, losing weight.
Phil may have lost too much weight. He's at that point. That happened to me at one point in my life where like I was a bit bigger and I was like, I'm gonna get into shape. And I went from like 180 down to like 150, and like I looked gaunt. all of a sudden. Like, being super fit was not a really good look on me. Like, I'm better somewhere off in between. Phil, I think, needs to, like, add 10 pounds back because, you know, at his age, like, you want to have a bit of fat on you the older that you get, because then your face doesn't look like it's caved in all the time.
Okay. Okay. I think he looks good. I think he looks like he has a little muscle on his arms. He's playing some good golf. People hating on him, that I love Phil.
Well, I mean, I don't think you and I have ever talked about Liv. Like, from the beginning, I haven't really cared. I didn't really have a stance on it one way or not. I just didn't think it was going to be like a super fun golf TV show to watch. Like, the back end of it is so bad, where you really have like 6 guys who are really good, another 10 guys who are pretty good, and it's just a bunch of old dudes or guys who legitimately are not good that they need to save money and fill out the rest of the roster with. But I never had like the vitriolic stance against it the entire time. Like, I was cheering for Brooks and Bryson this weekend. But my issue with Liv is they took all of my favorite characters from the PGA Tour, and that made me mad.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, from a selfish perspective, I understand that. And I've always been pro Liv, and I'm biased now because I actually won one of the 100K Liv tournaments that they first posted. So I'm pro Liv after that, baby. But in joking aside, I was like, I think there's so much there with Liv. But like, one of the things is like, oh, there can't be 2 pro leagues. Like, I don't think that's true, especially in the world of golf that's, you know, worldwide. You know, like, you can have college football and pro football, and you know, here in the States, that both make a shit ton of money. I think you can have 2 leagues across the world. Talent is subjective and changes with time, right? Like, Tiger's not playing anymore. We lost a huge talent there, but it's still fun, right? Like, so I mean, it just looks so bad after you take what, like 5 or 10 of the top golfers out. Like, clearly that was a talent drain, but I, you know, that doesn't convince me either. The you know, the strongest argument is how they're funded, obviously, but I don't know how they're funded. I don't know exactly how the, you know, the Saudi money is getting paid to DJ or anything like that. So like, leaving that aside, I was just totally on board with it. I like the competition. Why would we have loyalty to the PGA, right? Like, this association, like, I don't care. Like, you know, just do the PGL, the Professional Golfers League, to get new management in there. I don't care. Like, who cares who's running it, right? Like, for me, I also think the PGA's treated golfers pretty poorly a lot of the times. They've had monopolies, so there's nothing they can do. I don't like their coverage. Stinks. You agree with me on that. So like, there's so many things, and people have this like entitlement, like these golfers are theirs and they should, you know, like, what have you done to me? Like, you know, just go to Davis Maddox Twitter account. You'll see plenty of tweets like this. So for me, I'm all for it. I hope it gets bigger. I like the shotgun structure. It's pretty fun to watch if you just want to watch like an hour of golf. So, and it's, you know, some innovations. I'm all for like the waste management, you know, thing in PGA where the, you know, the college kids are going crazy, I think's fun. So I'm down for it. I do like, you know, nostalgic wise, like the records and stuff. I think that kind of sucks. Like, I do like records and the stats part of it. And so if they're not going to count these guys, that kind of stinks, but just generally speaking, I'm positive on it.
But we don't. I don't really care about the records, because the only records that matter in golf are majors records, and these guys can still play in the majors. And it's actually made the majors way more intriguing.
I agree with you, but didn't they not allow somebody?
Yeah,
to play in a
major? It's Gooch. Gooch has to go qualify for the U.S. Open now after winning back to back Live events. I feel like either the PGA and Live are going to coexist and merge in like 2 years' time, and all will be forgiven, and then all these guys will be back, or the official world golf rankings are going to have to kind of realize that this is the second best golf league on earth, probably. Is it better than Euro? Probably. Is it better than Korn Ferry? Probably. At this point, that, I don't know, or maybe they'll have to change 3 tournaments a year to make sure the guys can get enough points to get it. It just, especially if I'm like CBS or NBC, like the Masters is one thing because the Masters owns that broadcast. They can do whatever the fuck they want. But when you have, NBC shelling out all of this money for the British Open and the US Open, and CBS is shelling out all the money for the PGA Championship. They're like, well, what do we get with all of our existing golf contracts? But now we have these majors as well. If people aren't watching the Byron Nelson because of Live Left, or people aren't watching the Valspar because you're not getting stronger fields where three of the top Live guys may have played in this tournament, thus making it a much stronger field if DJ and Bubba had showed up to Tampa rather than Eric Cole and whoever the fuck is on the PGA Tour at the back end taking up those spots now. But if you can incorporate the Live guys into the majors, well, then you have a real reason to tune in to watch the majors, because this is the only time you're going to get to see these two leagues go head-to-head. There's a real draw in that. The issue with LIV and how it's structured, like you said, you like the shotgun start. If you want to watch an hour of golf, it's kind of perfect. And I agree with that. The issue that LIV is having is that is a business model for the PGA Tour, not a startup, because the only people that really know about LIV or care about LIV are like the really hardo golf people who really hate LIV to begin with. It's not big enough to have a casual audience yet.
Sure. I mean, and it's their money, right? It's the Saudis' money. If they want to spend another $200 billion promoting this till people actually do know about it, hey, more power to you. So it's a risky move by them, right? And it's probably just like buying a yacht or something, maybe, to them. Who knows?
It's nothing to them.
But yeah, so I mean, I agree with you. Like, they could have played this much better. I think the PGA, their response, like, kind of showed weakness, in my opinion. Like, by going, like, they hired, I don't know if you saw any of those documents, they hired like protest groups to protest LIV events. And
was that
some
true?
Really dirty under.
Was that true, or was that just what LIV said?
Oh, I think there's documentation on it. And listen, I saw it on Twitter, Pat, so it has to be true, right? That's the how deep of a dive I went into it. So maybe it's not true, but this show's for entertainment purposes only, right? Can't sue me. But there was some other things, like they tried to blackball some players, right? And they went to court, and the judge said they had to play, I think, also happened. So there's more than one, and just the full court press of hate on them from the PGA media too, because it's in their interest to do that, because they want to carry favor with the the organization they're covering. So I don't know. I mean I'd like to know if that was true or not, because I thought that one was pretty shady. But anyways, all that kind of, to me, kind of signals weakness, because if you have if Pat Mayo started his own Amazon delivery type company, I doubt Jeff Bezos is going to be shaking in his boots, right? So, like, they must, and also too, they ponied up money afterwards, right, to the players in that new pool of money for the 60 man fields and such. It's like, oh, where was that money last year? Of course, yeah. Now that you have less players, you're going to give us more money. So you couldn't have done this before. I would love it. Like, I am far from a communist, but I would love it if the players owned the PGA. I think they could hire some marketing people and stuff to do the gig. I thought it was as a kid. Apparently it's not.
The two things that I think what you said about the PGA is right, because they did show weakness, but it wasn't weakness that they were scared of LIV. It was weakness that now they actually had to pay the players a bigger portion of the pie that they were making, and that in order to keep them there and not going to LIV. And the biggest thing the biggest error that LIV has made is hiring Greg Norman. If they had just hired like a reasonable person that people don't actively hate, maybe someone who was, 30 years younger, you could have at least put a different, it has a different spin, but at least try to capitalize on that different spin, because it just feels like LIV is different for the sake of being different rather than this being like a real thing that people can get into.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they will hire somebody new. Maybe they should. I don't think it's over for them. I think their sunk cost fallacy. I imagine they're probably going to pump some more money in it. Maybe they should hire someone new. And I think if you gave the axe to Norman, that might carry favor with some of the Tigers or something, who are upset with how he handled it and poached the players. Maybe not. Maybe there's no reconciling it. So yeah, maybe that would be a good move. I don't really know any suggestions I would do for them. I just like the idea that the competition's out there, and you know, maybe, and we've already seen it. I don't know if you agree with this, Pat. I think the ESPN coverage on the app is better than it was before. That's not saying much because it was pretty bad before.
I think that the ESPN coverage is better than the broadcast coverage.
Agreed. Yeah. It still could be better though.
Most definitely it could be better, but at least you have many avenues on the app now to watch more of what you actually want to watch. Like if you have a bet on Cameron Smith and you want to bet on Cameron and you want to watch Cameron Smith, you can kind of do that at this point, not just pray he pops up somewhere. Now there's certain players that obviously you cannot do that for, but I think Liv's biggest drawback is that it didn't lean like 100% into gambling. Like that's where it would have got its audience from.
I agree. Yeah. They should have definitely contacted DraftKings and like been like, hey, we want some big prize pools for this. You know, this kind of goes back to the legislator thing we were talking about, the ignorance factor. Is like, I bet Greg Norman's like, what the heck is DFS, you know? So like, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. They should have leaned into sports betting, have the lines down there, the movements, and just like, and the coverage, just make a better, more cameras where you could follow your golfers. All of them are going at the same time. So you could be pretty, it could be like red zone golf kind of, you know? So like there's a bunch of things they could have done if they didn't hire, you know, this 67 year old guy. I got nothing against Norman, but they probably could have done some more innovation.
Well, you could have even it's a gimmick anyway with the team event and the shotgun start, like make a closest to the pin par three, and like people can bet on that all day if they want to.
Sure. Right. Yeah. They could have done a bunch of stuff. The live prize pool has been going down on DraftKings too. I'm not happy about. So like, I imagine if they like worked with them, they could have probably, who knows, maybe sponsored it themselves and paid some of the rake or something.
Maybe, but you also have to remember too, that like DraftKings and I think all the major betting companies and daily fantasy places are all official partners of the PGA Tour. So maybe that's a part of it. Like, hey, not too much focus on this.
I bet that's going. I bet that's happening. That might be it. It'd be that sucks too. That sucks for the players. I mean, and DraftKings does want to make money though. They still, you know, if they can make some extra cash, they do still have that incentive. But no doubt, I bet talks like that have happened. But like, let's assume it didn't. Like, you know, maybe Liv sponsors 100K to first rake free. That's going to fill every time, right? Like, do that for, you know, however long, maybe drop it, you know, half rake or something, or add it on. They'll add on 10K or 50K to the prize pool, just as their sponsorship deal with DraftKings. They could have done so many things, Pat. But
you don't think that if let's say Liv ran a Millie Maker, $1 million rake free on DraftKings, you don't think the same people that really besmirched the players for taking Saudi blood money, they'd play in that contest that was rake free? Really?
in a heartbeat. These guys have no actual morals, Pat. They like feeling good on the keyboard and shaming people and puffing themselves up a little bit, like, I'm a little bit more moral than you, Pat. That's what this is all about.
That is the internet, really, in a nutshell. Did you ever think that LOLs would become the investigative 60 minutes of the DFS space?
No, not at all. Yeah, that was totally organic. We also didn't think we would cover League of Legends for 6 months during COVID, but you know, hey, it happened.
So in like, because I know that you just had Hoop on talking about the Run Pure stuff and Ship It Nation, the brand new site with my buddy Tambo, started it with Hoop. Like, are people reaching out to you now to come on? Because I know that show did big time traffic.
No one's reached out to come on. You know, we'd be happy to have whoever, obviously. But just a lot of good, positive feedback. A lot of like people DMing me, you know, in the business and saying great show. That was awesome. Stuff like that. It was cool. It was nice reception. Yeah, I didn't think it would be that popular either. And we're going to have a bigger show than that too. It's drama, but it's not like that kind of drama. Hopefully in a few weeks. I can't spoil it though, because it might never happen.
Is Davis going to turn on Pete and go full heel?
You never know. You never know. Nah, Davis wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Gutless. Too gutless to do it, but that'd be the move for him. Really increase his stock. Increase the exposure, feuding with Pete.
He leaves the swell cast.
Yeah, just walks off.
Yeah. I can't do it anymore.
I did want to ask you, because I think I forgot if you said it or you had tweeted about it, but either way, did you watch all of Star Trek Picard?
I watched all of the last season, season three.
Now, I know that you and Davis do the Star Wars recaps over on his Patreon. So I've always been, since I was little, maybe it was the time that I was born and came of age, that the Star Wars movies were enough in the past and Next Generation was just taking off on TV. But I've always been far more of a Star Trek guy than a Star Wars guy. What about you?
No, I mean, first Star Wars, you know, the toys and stuff as a kid. And then Star Trek in Next Generation was what I got hooked on, not the original series. So it was the toys as a kid, Star Wars, and then Next Generation.
Did you like the final season of Picard? Because I feel like you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who went to Paramount Plus to watch it, actively seek it out, and then didn't like it. It hit every single sort of check mark of what you wanted from that show. Whether it was good or not is kind of irrelevant, that you just enjoyed watching it.
It's, yeah, nice change of pace, for a lot of this kind of legacy content has been really disappointing, in my humble opinion. But I thought the first four episodes were kind of like a mini little Star Trek movie. And if you consider that a movie, probably the best Star Trek in the last 25, 35 years. Maybe not 35 years, but like in a long time. The rest of the season was still good. I have my gripes on some of it, but it was still, compared to the other Star Trek. And I think he was trying to set up a new Star Trek series, clearly with the last outro. I don't know if you after credit scene.
Oh, I stuck around.
Okay. So then he has to play that like second half of the season slightly differently. But like the Star Trek has been so bad. Like I can't even make it through like an episode of a lot of those first two seasons.
Yeah. And, I haven't watched, there's a show called Prodigy. And I haven't seen a second of that, but I've watched all of new Star Trek, including like I watched all of Discovery. Lower Decks is excellent. The cartoon is just fucking hilarious. But I really like Strange New Worlds is coming back, which is like a riff off the original series. It's actually quite good because it's episodic. It's just, here's a story. It's 40 minutes. Then we're on to next week. We'll kind of pretend like the last episode didn't happen. We're just on to a new adventure. Like Discovery has some moments that are really good, but it is a fucking slog to sit through.
Right. Yeah. I couldn't make it through that. Like a lot of this, I'm not a fan of Kurtzman and most of his work. So I don't like in Star Trek the huge battle scenes and stuff. That's Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right. And like he's like huge on like 1,000 spaceships and 2,000 space monsters and all that stuff. And you know, a lot of the drama I didn't enjoy. You know, really the J.J. Abrams Disciples, I'm not a big fan of. Like I wasn't like the Star Trek movies that he did were like, all right, fine. I don't think that's Star Trek. Like Star Trek's like, you know, smart, you know, thoughtful, where they like in this Picard season where they were caught in that nebula, right? And they were trying to escape, and they came up with an idea of, you know, shooting I think it was like, you know, shooting a proton missile out and then exploding it, igniting part of the nebula and shooting that ship away, you know, or the countdown, you know, scene. I guess I'm doing spoilers here, but
it's fine.
These are all like smart Star Trek solutions. And also, too, they do a lot in the stuff I don't like. They do a lot of modern day issues, which Star Trek does in the past, but they do it well. And so like they do this allegory well, like in Next Generation, where we're really nerding out here, but like Next Generation, where the episode, do you remember this one, where it was like the planet that was a drug addict planet and they were addicted, and the supplier was the planet next to him.
Yeah, that was from the first season. The drug addicted planet, or the one planet only had one export, which was the drugs for the other planet.
Exactly, right? Yes. And you know, that first season can have some, had some brutal episodes, it was 1989, I think, so long time ago. But clearly that was like, you know, that the drug war was raging at that time, right? The whole DARE program. I don't know if you guys had any of that stuff up there, yeah. But yeah, like I had to go through DARE, you know? And so like, but it was done well. Like, I didn't know.
But how much are you, like, I would almost 100%, because there's a specific scene in that episode that I remember, which is Wesley going to the late, great Tasha Yar. I mean, she wasn't really all that great. She was late, though, of the first season. That it was kind of like the DARE moments, like, why are drugs bad? And then, like, she explains into the camera for 4 minutes why drugs are bad. I think if we went back and watched that now, I'd be like, oh, this is the most obvious thing in the world. So I hear the complaints about new Star Trek, like woke Star Trek. Like, there's probably never been a TV series more woke on television ever from 1965 on. Just trying to address progressive issues that, you know, trying to create. And some of the allegories are good, some of them are bad. But I think that the stuff that we watched as kids, to watch it through an adult lens, you're like, oh shit, this is the most obvious stuff on the planet. And that we're transferring that over to what we see now, but it's always kind of been that way.
That's entirely possible. I would argue it was done well the majority of the time then and poor now, even with the hindsight.
Agreed.
I think they force it a lot more in a contrived manner, and the contrivances of a lot of these shows is what pisses me off. It's like you're clearly forcing that, and not even talking about woke stuff. And also too, like, it doesn't even have to be woke. Like, it could just be any issue of the day, you know. You just want to do it. If it's done well, you don't even notice it a lot of the times.
Well, I think a part of the problem, especially because this has been the main complaint about Discovery, but essentially an entire Discovery season is like what one episode of TNG was. They've just taken the story and ripped it out. So it just seems far more tedious when they're trying to tackle something like, I think season 4 was like basically environmental issues and like pollution, that kind of thing, which is great for one episode. Whether it's done poorly or done well, you know, that doesn't really matter because the next week you're on to something else. But now when it needs to last for 12 episodes that are all an hour apiece, it's like, all right, like I've got it.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, maybe I should give that one a shot. It depends on who's directing it. I'll have to look and see. I hope they, oh God, his name escapes me, who did this last season of Picard 3. And like, the rumor is they just go, we screwed this up. You do what you want to do. And he was a PA on Next Generation when he was first coming up. So he was like a huge fan, and gave all us fans exactly what we would want to see in a movie. And so like, I'm hoping they see the numbers had to go up.
I just looked at it. There's like official Nielsen streaming ratings now. And I think like since the beginning of March, it's like the third highest stream show on across all streaming platforms.
So hopefully they give them another show. So like, I mean, it seems like to me, like even in the Star Wars world, it's like, who's writing it, who's directing it. Like Tony Gilroy is the guy who did Andor. And I know a lot of guys who like the sword fights and stuff like that, Star Wars fans who dig that stuff, didn't love it. I thought it was a fantastic show. Like, you could actually watch it with someone who's not a Star Trek fan. I think they'd enjoy it. And even women might like this one. And so if he does something, I'm going to watch it. But like, you know, it depends on who's directing some of the other Star Wars stuff. Like Obi-Wan, I thought was just brutal. And so like, it, for me nowadays, it's like, okay, who's directing it? Who's not directing it? And who's writing it? It's harder because like before I would just be like, oh, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, whatever, I'm watching it. Now, maybe not.
But these have to be the most profitable things a streaming service can get into, because especially for something like Paramount Plus, which I would have to imagine is behind Peacock in terms of how many subs that they have. At least Peacock is getting NFL games exclusive to them at this point to just to try to reel people in. But if you don't have one of these legacy shows, and obviously Disney Plus, if Disney Plus didn't have Star Wars, it would still be immensely popular because it still has every Disney product alive. If you have kids, you probably have Disney Plus just to put it on and like try to get 5 minutes for yourself. But with Paramount Plus, like, what's the barrier to entry with any of this stuff? Are people really clam? Like, I actually have Paramount Plus so I can watch their exclusive Challenge All-Star seasons and I can go back and watch Real World, but I feel like there's only so many of me out there to really push that forward. Star Trek still has their conventions that get hundreds of thousands of people every single year to go to in Vegas. Like, it's not as big as Star Wars, obviously, but I think that, let's say 100,000 people go to this convention, probably 100,000 of them bought Paramount Plus to watch Star Trek.
Who had the golf app before? Was it Paramount? One of them. I still have the subscription just because I had the live golf product before it became an ESPN product. That's why I still have a subscription there, which I need to cancel. Although my mom uses it for some show, so I guess I can't cancel it. With your point about like every company needs something like this, I agree with that. Like. But like there's kind of two thoughts I have in here. One is like I'm so shocked with Star Trek and Star Wars that you don't recognize what you recognize there. It's like how can you blow these, you know, multi-billion dollar brands? You could, if you just do it, you know, if you just like they go so like in Star Wars is more in my wheelhouse on this specific thing, but like they didn't show Mark Hamill until the last second, you know, of their big huge release of the first movie after the original trilogies, The Force Awakens. And it's like, what, you think that's what the fans want? And then he's like a whiny guy, you know, like, and he's you know, his character is completely different, you know. Even Mark Hamill says that. Like, fine, you know, be artistic, you know, write the shows however you want. But like is someone who's owning like a $1 billion product, why would you risk that? Like, why would you come out with these products? And like Star Trek has been so mishandled since All Things Must Pass, the last episode of TNG, in my opinion. Like, there's a lot of good stuff, right? Don't get me wrong. Like Deep Space Nine.
I'm going to throw out that Deep Space Nine is better than Next Generation. I don't think it's close.
Yeah. Okay. That fair. Fine. I think my brother says the same thing, but like, but like the movies, like none of them were good.
No, they're bad. Like bad movies.
Yeah. It's like you guys realize there's a ton of money in here.
But the J.J. Abrams ones, I actually think did the movies right in order to be popular, because they were, like you said, they're not very Star Trek-y at all. They're just action adventure, which is really weird because with the Star Wars reboots and remakes, and that's why I think that Andor is kind of funny when it comes to this. I haven't watched like many of them, but I would guess that they're all supremely high budget stuff because Star Wars has to be supremely high budget with space opera and space battles. Like, graphic visual effects cost a lot of money. What's funny about the Star Trek stuff, and especially the reboots, is they have these giant space battles and the huge set pieces, which obviously cost a lot of money. But no one ever cared about that. It seems like they're wasting money on it. Like, the best episodes of Next Generation are essentially courtroom dramas.
Yeah, so, I agree. Yeah, like, we do not need all these space battles. This is not, it's not Star Trek. I with a lot of this stuff and you know, the woke complaints, the woke changes, I always go, just like make a new thing. If that's how you want it to be, that's how you want Star Wars to be. Just make a new thing. And I would argue like a little bit with the Abrams track movies, like, yeah, maybe they brought some people in, but a lot of those people, they come and go, right? Star Trek fans are psychos and they buy everything. They buy all the video games and they're fans for life, and you don't want to piss them off. And I think you want to cater to them and just make good stuff and you'll get more people too. So like those movies were fine. But they just weren't Star Trek. And I like Star Trek. So like the first four episodes in Picard 3 is Star Trek, and it's good Star Trek. And so I would recommend it. And, you know, if they don't want to make Star Trek anymore, make something else, you know, whatever. It's I can't control it. But I just want original Star Trek. But like I had a second point I wanted to say, and I can't, and I lost my train of thought. But what were you talking about right before that you brought that up? Maybe it'll hit me, or if you got another comment.
I was just going to say just how valuable these legacy projects are for streamers. I wanted to make the point about Apple Plus, which seems to do the best original programming, just no one gives a shit. Like, Ted Lasso has become like a big hit, but it's not actually a big hit. Like, what do you think, it's really pumping up Apple Plus subscriptions? That if I bought a new iPhone, so I got 3 months free, so I watched Ted Lasso. I'm not sticking around for anything else because there's nothing on there. Like, you need to have an established product to begin with, and you could do all of the best work, but then you're relying on word of mouth with like 8 separate streamers out there right now. If you have no legacy products, I just don't know how you can justify pumping money into a streaming service, because it's just not going to work.
Okay, now I remember, and it's related to that too, not Ted Lasso, but Tombstone, right? Like, I think they were pretty sharp there. Like, you do one. I haven't watched it. I'm just going based off of, you know, reviews.
Are you talking about Tombstone or Yellowstone?
Oh, Yellowstone. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Western.
I was like, is there a Tombstone remake that I don't know about?
And it's fantastic, Pat. No. Yeah, Yellowstone. Sorry. And now they have Yellowstone. They have what, the 1895 or whatever is the other one. They have a whole bunch of tied in, you know, prequels and sequels. And they didn't really advertise it. It's not a legacy product. They just, you know, I'm assuming since it's so popular, it's done really well. And, you know, I think that's just like a great way to run these platforms. Like, don't spend any damn money. Just make a really good show and milk the shit out of it.
Well,
you know,
they do spend on these like secondary series that they've made. They've spent a ton of money on. I mean, to get Harrison Ford into a TV show, that's probably like $50 million right there.
That's true. I was talking more like the advertising and stuff. I don't think they spent a whole ton of money on advertising.
Yeah, that's
and they
true.
Didn't spend any money on IP acquirement.
No, it's their original IP. I guess they would have to, you know, give the bag to Taylor Sheridan and move on. But like, even when they took Shonda Rhimes off of her like I think it was an ABC run and brought her to Netflix, like, I don't know what she's doing at Netflix anymore. Like, she was supposed to, I think they gave her $100 million to create these shows. I couldn't name one show she created for Netflix.
I think a lot of these companies are doing that. You know, if you listen to these rumor mills, like, they have like 18 shows in development, none of them ever get made, and they're paying for all that. So, you know, speaking of Liv being run poorly, I think a lot of these entertainment companies are just making huge mistakes. It just sucks when it's one of the few things I watch. I don't really watch much. I like sci-fi stuff, but there's not a lot of good sci-fi these days. Apple's got some okay stuff.
Yeah,
Foundations.
I really wouldn't know, to tell you the truth. Like, well, Terry Metalis is the guy that did season 3 of Picard. He also created the 12 Monkeys TV show for sci-fi, which I haven't watched, but if he did it, I assume it's like, all right.
Yeah, I haven't watched that either. On Apple TV, I've watched Silos, the first 4 episodes just happened. So far, so good.
You know, no complaints. Do you stream MLS on Apple or watch the Apple MLB TV game of the day?
I don't watch any sports except PGA and MMA, basically.
Really? Has that always been a thing?
Oh, no. I used to watch religiously all sports. But, yeah, I haven't watched a baseball game in I don't know how long, 8 years. I haven't watched an NBA game probably same amount of time. I watch Red Zone. I watch Red Zone.
Yeah. Red Zone's great. I built my own Red Zone with 8 TVs on the wall. Just be like, all right, what am I going to try to focus on right now while the games are going on? It's fun. It's how I get to spend my Sundays and get away from my family for half a day, and I can pass it off as work. It's kind of nice. But I can do what?
You can on YouTube TV now. They're putting this mosaic view.
So we don't have that. So our Sunday ticket is not through YouTube TV. It's through both DAZN, and DAZN has come up with the first year it was on DAZN up here, and I think it's DAZN internationally that owns the Sunday ticket rights, that it was so bad, like the lag time was like 2 minutes behind the games, that they repurposed and leased their Sunday ticket rights to both Rogers and Bell, our two main TV companies up here. So DAZN gets a cut, but you can watch it through your terrestrial TV too, and then there's no lag.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, YouTube TV here, it does have a delay. It's not huge, I don't think, but they're just coming out. They just did it for March Madness. They released like a demo, and supposedly it's supposed to be ready for NFL but you could have, you could split your TV into four screens live and then put whatever you want on there. So that could be an option for a lot of bros who don't want to buy, you know, six screens in their basement. You just get one big TV and then you could pick whatever you want.
Yeah, if that was an option, I wouldn't have bought so many TVs. I would have bought one really big TV and done that, and maybe had like two other TVs just to get the rest of the games on them. But I'm shocked that MLB.TV did this like 10 years ago, and apparently no one figured it out.
Yeah, I remember I had the subscription, yeah, back in the day that they had Mosaic View. Watch four games at once.
You used to be able to set up MLB TV back when I actually like covered baseball and cared about baseball. Like, I would set my fantasy lineup into the system that whenever my guy, like one of my screens was, whenever my guys was up at the plate, it would just switch to that game, which was awesome.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Imagine you could do that for golf. You have like your main core of DraftKings guys or the guys that you bet on, and you could watch the three streams in one. Like, the Masters would be perfect for this because the Masters actually does record every shot of every player, and you can set it up that way. It's just a little bit on an extended delay. But if you get it almost real time where you set up, like, here are the seven guys who I want to watch for every shot, it just makes a playlist to go to them live every time they're going to hit.
Yep. Yeah, perfect. And, you know, maybe adjust based on importance. Like, if someone's got some you know, funky shot, you want to watch that one over another one. But yeah, that would be great sweat. You know, you watch that right as on cut, you know, cut day, and you know, I mean, you could watch it whenever, but definitely on the cut line, that'd be fun. And getting your seven golfers, and like, you just need Jason Day to just par these last two. Jason, he's not gonna do it, but you can watch.
It'd be nice to be able to watch. That's all I'm really asking for. It's funny that we have we have programs now that can write essays for us and predict the future. We can't figure out how to stream golf.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, with all this AI talk taking over the world. But what do we get? What do we get in reality?
Nothing. Get nothing. Nothing good comes from any of this stuff. So I think that'll do it for this one. I'd love to have you back on sometime because I have a list of questions here that I don't think that we touched on one of them. I had one question for you that was, is the world better now or worse now that everything is easier? But we can probably tackle that next time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to come back.
This is fun. All right. Thanks, Bri. Where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
Brian Hooper _ on Twitter. And I got a website, brick75.com.
Can you tell the people about brick75.com and what they can get there?
It's free, and I post my MMA projections and ownership there, and PGA ownership projections that I make myself and use myself. And I have a HUD, it's called the Draft Caddy. That's an overlay for best ball and sports betting and stuff, where you can overlay data right on the screen. Like, you know, if you subscribe to any site that does projections, you know, ETR, Stochastic, you can just overlay them right on the props on the sports betting site, or you can put your like ownership exposures on your next to your best ball player, so you don't draft too much of one guy or who their week 17 matchup is. Like, you could drop, there's a drop down list of a whole bunch of stuff you could change from. And then this year we added a auto drafter, which was banned by Underdog. I previously had it where it would just draft for you based on how you want to draft. Like, you can put so much correlation with your QB. You can do like a zero RB strategy and maximum amount of player per position. But so far they're banned that. They're talking about like how they want to handle this. And I switched it to it now suggests a player and puts it in your queue. So you can take them, not take them, you know, whatever, but that's how they want it for now. And then we're going to port it over to DraftKings next afterward. We're in beta right now, but it's pretty cool. Like, I don't want to spend that much time. I don't know about you, Pat, but I don't want to spend an hour every day entering 150 lineups into Best Ball Mania 4, but I'd like to play it. So, and I only got 50 in last year. So some of them I want to automate the end of my teams. It's not like a solver, you know, it's not like a perfect sim. It's just a smart version of their autopilot.
And it's just a Chrome extension, isn't it?
It's a Chrome or Mozilla. Chrome is really tough to get in their store these days, especially with anything gambling related. So we're still trying on that one. But Mozilla, it's in the store. For Chrome, you got to download it on my website. That one is $25 a month, though. It costs a lot of money to pay people to build this stuff. So, but the other stuff's free.
Oh, that's why you got to talk to Justin. Maybe we can split costs on it.
Yeah, okay. We talked about it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's a great tool. I suggest everyone use it, and especially if it's banned in one place, just play on DraftKings. Sounds like the easiest way to do it, because the Pat Mayo Experience, still brought to you by DraftKings. So play DraftKings. I've confessed this to a lot of people, but I don't like best ball.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't at first.
Okay. Sell me. But convert me.
It's just I think the whole selling point is, did you play fantasy football, growing up? Like, were you and your buddies got in the room, got some beers maybe, and drafted?
Yep.
Old pen and paper days?
Yep.
Like, that was fun. It's nostalgic, and it's the rest of the season is a grind, and I hated making transactions and trades and stuff. I liked it when I was 19 and 20 and 21. But as I get older, I don't want to spend time doing this and evaluating these horrible trade offers for my buddy. So, like, the whole fun is draft day. And that's all best ball is just the draft day.
So I get that. And that's what's been articulated to me in the past. But isn't that just what DFS is every week?
Yes. But you're in competition making your lineup. When you're doing DraftKings, there's no competition. You're just sitting there going, Griot, I don't know. Where when you got a clock and someone else might take them, that changes things. So it's a little game in a game, where DFS, you got all the time in the world to enter that lineup. I love DFS too, don't get me wrong.
Well, how about this? How about I'm having a meeting next week about the launch of PGA Best Ball? How about that? Full season
PGA Best Ball.
Full season PGA Best Ball.
Full season PGA Best Ball.
Not this just the majors nonsense.
Okay, and then so then I draft and I gotta wait a year?
Well, you'd wait the season. Probably launch it for Phoenix, I'm guessing, or whatever the week is with the football off week when people start paying attention to golf, actually. Farmers.
Yeah.
Probably go from Farmers to through the FedEx Cup, maybe end at the British Open.
I mean, this is just my personal opinion. There's just not enough like correlations and stuff in PGA as there is in football. So like a PGA automated drafter would be like, just draft the best player you think, like re-rank them how you want them.
But if the whole point is everyone loves to draft, wouldn't that be a fun thing to draft?
Well, no, because then you don't have the take Joe Burrow. I mean, it's still fun. Don't get me wrong. I would say NFL is more fun because like you could take Joe Burrow and ruin my stack, but if you take Hideki Matsuyama, what does that matter to me? I'll just take the next best golfer. But I mean, it's the PGA. I did enter their PGA one a few times. I think I'm still alive. Actually, I got to check after yesterday. PGA. I think the one day ones could be fun more so than one day ones. In NFL, because NFL, like that the whole drafting on for like just a Sunday, I don't know, I don't love it. But for PGA, you got all week, right, up till Thursday to fill it. That could be actually kind of fun, and it doesn't change as much, because like NFL, their starting running back's like, oh, he's not going to play today. News at 11 o'clock on a Sunday. That doesn't really happen in PGA, barring a few injuries here or there. So like just getting like big best ball 1 week tournaments, I think could be a thing. Maybe not, but like either way, best ball is pretty fun. I think you can make some money in it. One of the problems is the long. It takes so long to get a payout, like a futures bet or something like that.
Yeah, but I think I think that might be you looking at it that way. And I know a lot of people within our industry, pro bettors, pro DFS players, the turnover of money so quickly is a part of the alluring part of it. Why people don't bet futures or even like high stakes fantasy football leagues at this point. But I do think for your average person who is not just doing this every single day, that there's some sort of safety and fun. Like, hey, I can put up $50 now. That $50 is now my 6 months worth of entertainment.
That's true. It's like it's kind of like PGA DFS golf, where you get 4 days for your bang for your buck, which I enjoy. So that's fair. That's fair enough for your regular guy. Some of them will like that. I got no problem with that. I was more or less, I guess, saying that I like the possibilities for PGA 1 week. More than any other sport, I think because like for the reasons I explained, because you have more time. There's very few changes, not a ton of correlation that you could draft during the week and get, you know, maybe get some 100K prize pools for a week, 1 week basketball PGA. That'd be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty awesome. So I'll have to bring up 100K daily best ball. Better than showdown is what I'll call it. Did you watch, I mean, obviously you watched the PGA championship. Were you in or out on Michael Block?
I don't think I played him. Yeah.
No, not play him, but like just as a spectator of watching the PGA championship. Oh. Did you like the story?
Out because he wasn't in none of my lineups. That's it.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. That will do it on the Pat Mayo Experience. Like and sub, as always, and check out the Lulz podcast with Brian and Pete Overzet coming out. When is it live? Every single week?
Thursdays at 1:30 Eastern, 12:30 Real America time.
Is Real America time that one in the middle?
That's Central. Yeah, Real America.
God. Horrible time zone. Anyway, that will do it for the show. Thank you all for watching. Appreciate it. I'm Pat Mayo. I'll see you next time.
Experience. For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.